For Main Street Book Club, we welcome back Charles Montgomery, professor in the English Interpretation and Translation Department at Dongguk University and the founder of KTLIT.com. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. I'm pleased to be back.
Long time no see. Hope you had a nice vacation sunny Cali.
Spent basically a month in California working on my tan and Beltline, getting darker and expanding the Beltline.
And you look it, too. I don't know about the Beltline, but you do look much darker.
Definitely came back browned up, yeah.
So what's on the table today?
Well, we're going to talk about a Korean author who I think is, as all Korean authors are, but perhaps even more sort of undeservedly unknown, and that's Hwang Soon-won, as you said.
So who is he and why is he important?
Well, he's an interesting character to me because, backtracking a little, when I first came to Korea and really got into the literature, he was a name that wasn't recommended to me a great deal. And so I kind of found him as I went along. There were other names that hopped up in front of him. And as I became more and more familiar with Hwang Soon-won, partly through my friendship with translator Bruce Fulton, who was his friend at one point, Hwang is dead. Now has deceased. I discovered that he was very important in Korean literature and had been really quite widely translated in the last century. The Book of Masks, The Descendants of Cain, The Moving Castle, Shadows of Sound, Sunlight, Moonlight, Trees on a Slope, Cranes, Lost Souls, The Drizzle. These are all either collections of short stories or rather substantial novels.
All in translation.
All in translation. And when you look at Korean authors, that is a tremendous amount of work in translation.
Yeah, especially earlier Korean authors, right?
Right, during sort of what you might call the unknown or the pre-postmodern period, if that doesn't sound totally ridiculous. Mm. And the thing is, as I looked into him, he really had a tremendously long literary career, and he's an interesting guy, which really worked out in his stories. When you hear about his personal story, you get some sense of why he was able to write on a wide variety of things. And he was a craftsman. He was the consummate short story writer of 20th century Korea. He could switch around in dialects. He could work in rural or urban settings. His narrative techniques were widely varied. He had a vivid imagination. And his characters, and I'll probably come back to this, his characters are spectacularly diverse, but he has an unbelievable ability to make his characters realistic, to give them motivations that work and that are understandable in translation, which is... So there are sometimes two different problems. Mm-hmm. Often Korean authors do this in their Korean stories, but it doesn't survive translation. For Hwang, it really, really survives translation quite well.
So before we get to know his works, let's talk about him a little bit. What's his personal story?
Well, again, super, super interesting guy. Lived through a lot of Korean history, a lot of Korean modern history. He was born in 1915, just about the time that Korean modern literature kicked off with Lee Kwang-soo's Mujong, or Heartlessness. And he was born near Pyongyang, so he was born in North Korea. And he was educated there initially, and then, as many sort of intellectual Koreans did at that time, he went to Tokyo to get further education, and that was at Waseda University. And he began writing super, super early. It was only in his 20s, and he had already published two volumes of poetry, and in 1940, his first volume of stories was published. But what happened in between is really kind of interesting. Right after, during that period, the Japanese outlawed all publication, all writing and publication in the Korean language.
Yeah, it was part of their policy to assimilate Koreans into Japanese culture.
Japanese became the official language in all arenas. So this did not stop Hwang, though. From that point until colonialization ended, he continued to write, and he wrote in Korean, and he wrote for long stretches of that time with the expectation that his writing would never be published, because there were periods during that time prior to the war when it looked like Japan was just going to continue to colonialize Korea. Mm-hmm. So he just wrote and wrote and wrote in the hope that someday his work would be published in Korean. And at the same time, all men his age were being impressed into the Japanese war machine. So he actually went underground or on the lam to avoid becoming part of the colonial sort of war industry that Japan had created. So he wasn't exactly a freedom fighter in the sense of taking up arms, but he was a freedom fighter in a different way. If you believe that in some cases the pen is mightier than the sword, that's how he was fighting for freedom. Mm-hmm. And so the good news is World War, I suppose that's not the good news. The bad news that led to the good news is World War II. One of the results was colonialization ended in Korea, and Hwang then just wrote like crazy. He wrote 7 novels, more than 100 short stories. He moved down. He experienced the whole Civil War. And he ended up, he started in the north, as I said, and they moved from the Soviet-occupied northern sector of Korea to the American-occupied south. And then he just started writing, and he never really stopped writing until his death.
Mm-hmm. Of course, he is most famous for his short story, Sonagi.
Yeah, you know, when his name comes up, one story comes up and comes up and comes up and comes up, and that is Sonagi. And I may be overstating because I only know what's been translated, but I think it's fair to say that there's no Korean short story as beloved and well-known as this one.
Oh, it was part of the textbook.
Yeah,
the Korean language textbook.
When I talk to Koreans, any Koreans who are my students now at Donguk Daehakyo, 19 and 20-year-olds, are like, oh, yeah, Sonagi, middle school. I read that in middle school. And then I talk to, you know, Halaboji, and they know this story. I mean, everybody knows this story. And in part, it's popular because it's really a simple story.
Yeah.
It's sort of bucolic. It's out in the countryside. It's young love. And it also demonstrates some of his writing skills, because even though it's short and simple language and content, it's kind of tricky. It shifts around between present and past tense, and it has a sort of complicated, I won't ruin the ending, but there's a very, very sad aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he handles also this with a great deal of delicacy. And so this has sort of become the story that if you talk to a Korean and you say, you know, what should I read? There's about a 50% chance that they're going to say Sonagi.
Yeah.
And that will get you started. And he wrote we'll talk in just a second. He wrote other stories too. He wrote The Cranes, and he wrote other short stories that are also quite important in Korean literature. But this was I might compare it to, Walter Mitty for, say, James Thurber. James Thurber in English wrote a lot of great stories, but Walter Mitty got into the school textbooks, and so everyone in the United States knows that story.
There's actually a park dedicated to Sonagi in Hwangsun-won, isn't there?
There is, and it's I will mispronounce this, Sunungri Sojangmyeon Yangpyeong, and it's a almost 20-acre outdoor literature park, and it's not just literature. It's also super beautiful. We talked about it a couple months ago when we were talking about places, destinations related.
Yeah, the Kim Yu-jung house you mentioned.
Yeah, some other things. But this one is not only sort of takes the Sonagi theme in Sonagi, the two children shelter from the rain. Sonagi means short, intense rainstorm.
Shower, right.
Which I think we can all identify with after yesterday. And they shelter under some what I would describe as eaves of grain. And so that theme is there, and the river theme is there. But it's just also a really, really great place to hang out if you're down there. And it has an excellent museum related to Hwang and Sonagi, and a video that you can watch. And I was told when I was down there, which was 2 years ago, as we talked about, that although Hwang is deceased, his wife is still alive in her 90s, and she occasionally shows up there. I don't know if that's still true. I do know that we'll probably talk about this again, because if I remember correctly, the Sonagi Festival is in September, and I fully intend to get down there to see that.
Oh, they have a festival down there as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's in September, and I'm going to find out when that is and make sure to get down there, because he is that important a writer. And as I said, as I found more and more of his books, I became more and more impressed by his writing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to get to know his books in a little more detail in just a bit, but first we have to play you this.
Listen to me.
Join us on An Jeong-yeon's 1013 Main Street. There are several ways to do so. You can get your phone out and send us a text to #1013 at 50 won per message. Or if you're in front of a computer, you can log on to tbscfm.seoul.kr and leave a message on our board. Or how about tweeting us at 1013 Main Street?
We're We're talking about Hwang Soon-won in this week's Main Street Book Club, and we talked about a couple of short stories. Should we talk about his longer works then?
Yeah, I'll just say a few words about one other story that I mentioned before the break, which is Cranes, which is another one of his sort of canonical stories. And it was published in 1953, and it's a story of two childhood friends who get separated by the Korean War, get on separate sides, and when they meet again is sort of a tale of friendship overcoming political strife, and it has a very nice ending compared to many works of that time. So this is another one to look for if you're looking for him. I should say that many of these stories are collected in the collection called Lost Souls, which is available. This is a relatively new collection. It came out 2 years ago, high quality, and it can be found on all the regular online areas. So if you're interested in his short stories, look for Lost Souls. You can also look online for Sonagi.
Lost Souls, okay. Yeah. So let's talk about his longer work, starting with Descendants of Cain.
Yeah, because this is the one that most foreigners come across first. It was most recently published, and it's the smallest. One of the things I should say, we'll talk about his writing style in a second, is he can really write long novels. He can really write long novels. My comparison to him is Charles Dickens, because he writes these tremendously populated, lots of characters, you know, some main characters and some characters that are super notable, but also within the sort of things he creates all of these secondary and support characters, all of whom are really, really well fleshed out. And so if you're going to read, one of the reasons I believe that Descendants of Cain is most well known is it's the shortest.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a third the length of his other novels.
Okay.
So if you want to start with him and get a sense for how his novels go, Descendants of Cain is a really, really good one.
It's an enticing title as well.
Well, yeah, it kind of tells you the story. It's one of the really best Pundan Munhak stories that I've read. And it's the story of a village, basically, and just what happens when the battles over land reform come and how historical grievances start to play into that. You know, people who feel that they have been abused take advantage of these shifts in political power to gain the upper hand and then abuse those who they feel have abused them. And again, even though that's a very sort of sad story, Hwang's skill is to give all of the characters, even the characters who you read as sort of evil, they have justifications. You understand what they do. It reminds me in a little way of Kim Won-il's Evening Glow, which is a similar story in which, as a foreign reader, you can understand the motivations of the characters. You don't have to know everything about the politics to understand what's going on. So if you're interested in starting with Hwang Soon-won's novels, Descendants of Cain is an excellent place to start.
Mm-hmm. What about his other novels?
Well, here we go. Now we're really moving into the long ones. And the Moving Castle, I guess, is the shortest of the long ones. There are three really, really long ones, one of which I should say we won't get to, and that's great because it's 500 pages, and I'm still reading it.
Oh, okay.
And I devoted a substantial part of my vacation to reading, and Hwang Soon-won was a large part of that. But Moving Castle is a brilliant work. As I said, it's Dickensian in scale. It's got three main characters, but three main characters are... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong story. Yeah. The Moving Castle has basically romantic relationships, three romantic relationships. But these romantic relationships keep changing, and people are traveling all over Korea. So they're constantly meeting all of these new characters who are then quickly and accurately described, and all of whom contribute to the story. And what Hwang does is he starts with those relationships, and then he creates relationship loops and creates loops and loops and loops. And another one of his talents, again, very much like Dickens, is that he manages to juggle all of these in a way that you can understand. I will say for this book, the first five chapters, which are short chapters, you have to pay a lot of attention because he introduces all the characters at once, basically. Just bang, 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 bang.
Keep going back to the chapters.
Yeah, you're just going back and forth. And as I said, his writing style, he trusts the reader. He jumps from place to place and expects that you will follow. The other thing is that it's in the McCune-Reischauer romanization, which is sometimes difficult for foreigners to read, you know, the one that has all the diacriticals and the commas. But it's absolutely worth it to go through. It also has a really, really interesting – one of its main plots is kind of the struggle between Christianity and shamanism. at that time, and it has really interesting discussions of shamanism and the role of sexuality in shamanism, and definitely worth reading. He uses symbols and metaphors very cleverly, and at the end, one of the other characteristics of Huang's work is that things are difficult, but it's worth struggling through. He almost always ends in some way that gives you a message that the work you have to do in life is worth it, that you just have to keep going.
Mm-hmm. And Trees on a Slope?
Yeah, Trees on a Slope. Sorry, that was the one I started with. Trees on a Slope is maybe the next one I would move to because it's about the war. It follows three soldiers and how the war changes them. And there are two versions of this. There's one version, Trees on a Slope, and one version, Trees on the Cliff.
Different versions depending on the translators.
Yeah, and I should also say that it is being retranslated again. So if you get to Huang Sun Wan, and it's being retranslated again by Bruce and Juchan Fulton. So if you do get interested in Huang Sun Wan, you might want to wait on this one because there's the expectation that there will be a newer and spiffier translation coming out in the next year or two. And the characters twine and intertwine as Huang plots. Again, the symbols. The work can be read as an allegory, if you wish. You know, each person is a character. You know, one person represents shamanism, one person represents Catholicism, one person represents new love, one person represents traditional love. But it also works just beautifully as storytelling. And then the final one that I told you about is called Sunlight, Moonlight. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I'm still sort of working my way through that one.
What's that about?
Well, I don't even really know yet, except because it starts very interestingly. It's about butchers.
Yeah.
But again, it's not that simple. And as you know, butchers historically were something like untouchables in Korean society. The job of the butcher was a job that excluded you from society. But he starts on page one saying it's going to be about butchers, and I'm 100 pages in, and he hasn't really revisited butchers yet. He's still setting up these loops and loops and loops and loops and relationships, and so he's really fun to read. If you like reading, this is a guy that if you just like the process of reading and following a story that's going from place to place, this is the guy to read.
Mm. So his longer stories are a little more epic in scale?
Yeah, I think it's super, super safe to say epic. And so briefly, I think we could return to the collection Lost Souls.
Lost Souls, okay.
Because this is sort of an epic collection also. It's three collections put together, a collection Pond, which he wrote in the 30s, a collection The Dog of Crossover Village, which is also a relatively famous story of his, but the collection is named for it, and Lost Souls. These are put together into one rather large collection. And the only thing I'd say about this one is I might skip over some of the earlier stories because they put it in chronological order, and you can see his skill developing as he goes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting thing about this approach. And also, as from a Western perspective, we're going to understand less what he's talking about in those early stories. Now,
kind of follow his literary career.
Yeah, you follow his career and you follow his sort of change from political to non-political, and you also follow the increasingly lyrical nature of his writing. He was actually sometimes in Korea sort of criticized for being too lyrical and not realistic enough, not focusing. And this is an amazing criticism for me when you think of stories like Descendants of Cain and The Dog of Crossover Village, but the complaint was made that he was excessively artsy, yeah. maybe the way to say it.
Okay.
And what else is in that one? It has some really amusing stories. The Lost Souls, which is the last one, the last collection, has some really great stories. Pibari, some of our readers will know about this. Uh-huh. And this is what I was saying. He covers everything. You know, Pibari, this is on Jeju. These are the divers, the women, very independent women who live on Jeju and sort of supported the economy of Jeju. And he does a story about that. He has hallucinatory stories of war and death. He has stories of alcoholism. He has stories of friends and cheating. I mean, he just covers so many different kinds of stories that when you get when you get one of these collections by Huang Sun Wan, you get a collection that if one story does not interest you for one reason or another, the next story will. And I should also say that that's true of his collection Drizzle, which can be found online, and I mentioned Drizzle only because I have a copy of it, and I was amused to go online again and check and discover that if you become the consummate Huang Sun Wan fan and you want a complete collection, you will pay $316 for that book.
What? For that one book?
For that one book. It's the most expensive book I have ever looked for online.
What would be the reason?
Doesn't exist.
Huh.
It was translated 30 or 40 years ago, and the only copies that still exist are coming out of, like, GI libraries.
I see.
As those libraries are broken down. So, Huang Xunwan, definitely worth checking out. And once you get involved in reading his work, expect a lot of reading, because there are literally thousands of pages of his work translated into English.
Good stuff. Thank you very much, Charles.
My
pleasure. See you next week. That's Charles Montgomery, professor from Dongguk University with Main Street Book Club. And if you want more information on the stuff that he covers in this segment, you can go online to his website, ktlit.com. And we're going to wrap up this segment with Northern Light and Tears Are Not Enough.
As every day goes by, how can we close our eyes until we open up our hearts?
We can learn to share and show how much we care. Right. Do it!